let's go. So we were saying the last lecture, we were discussing the use of the attack signal models to answer a question of how you can guarantee that a synchronous system can be implemented in an asynchronous architecture and maintain equivalence, quote unquote, right? So now the equivalence that that we will see, I mean, we'll define it, but the equivalence we are interested in is the fact that if you sit here and you see the outputs of two systems and the sequence of values that you see from the two systems is the same, then the two are equivalent, even though the output may come at different times. But what is important is the sequence, right? And so, and this is called also stream equivalence. Okay. So in any case, so let's look at how this goes. So we know that process attacks are not generally ordered, and so we know that tags can be used to express causality, in which case then we use the partial order to express causality. And time systems are when the tags correspond to a notion of time that is a totally ordered set. So it's just a, how to say, a review of what we already said. Okay, now we assume that the tag set T is partially ordered, so that that's always the case. Otherwise, really a system where there is no relationship between anything, that it's not clear what is it's used, right, what is it used for. Now then we define a clock H, which is a non-decreasing map from the set of natural numbers to T. So in other words, it's an indexing of the time, like the clock in hardware. You have something that intervenes at a certain of time. And so and in general, the clock ticks are multiple of the minimum resolvable time, and they can be counted. So that's the reason why they are put in relation with the natural number n. Now, how we can model heterogeneity when the set T of tags can be adjusted to account for different classes of systems. So we can use tags to describe synchronous system, in which case then we know that all the signals have, all the events in all the signals must have a common tag, right? So the common tag exemplifies the fact that the events occur lined up in time, if you like, in extended time. Now, the more interesting question is about asynchronicity. So what do we define to be asynchronicity? So there are two definitions of asynchronicity. And one which is the complement of synchronous. Whatever is not synchronous is asynchronous. Right? By the way, I forgot to send the slide. Oops. Okay, so I'll send them immediately after we finish class. So, and that, which means that some events may be lined up and some may not be lined up. Okay, and so that we call asynchronous, right? But if we want to use positive, if you like, definition, so instead of saying it's whatever is not synchronous, and we want to say what asynchronicity really means, then we would say that a system is asynchronous when all its signals don't share any tag at all. So then so in this case, asynchronicity is not the complement of synchronicity, because there are in between systems in which some of the events share tags and some of the events don't. Right? In the full definition of synchronicity, says that nothing is shared, right? Everything goes on its own. So even asynchronicity, people are not quite sure what should be. Well, time system, we already discussed that. But the tag can be used to define this, to define this, to define this, or to define any other kind of semantics of a signal. And that is the reason why it is convenient, because it's so general. So we say tags generalize, heterogenize, we also say. I also told you last time that actually tags can have multiple values associated with a single tag, right? And this is a case in point. Then you have a actually the following information, is the reaction, physical time and causality. So you can even have three elements associated with each other. So, for example, you can have, here you see one and one over there, and this is the index of the reaction. Then you have the actual time, T1, T3, T4, so that's the physical time. And then you have these arrows that can be associated with text that express causality, which means that this guy is causally related to this guy, which in other words implies that S1 must be, if we have the same tag system, implies that S1 must be larger or equal than T1. Now this is again causally related, which means that the tag S2 has to be larger or equal than T3. So that's like information about causality. So that puts in relation the various objects. So we can have even a triple of fields that define the tag. So, and of course, some of this may be redundant. If indeed this tag system is the same, right, S and T are the same set, then both the reaction time, the reaction index, and the causality relation are redundant, meaning that the actual numbers that you see in S1, S2, S4, T4, T3, and T1 will be satisfying this relation, plus they will come in sequence. Okay. But if we, as I told you, if you want to keep this information around, because we may want to do some operation, some optimization and so on, and we need to recover the information that we may have lost during the refinement process, then this use of multiple tags is very interesting. So we say that tags can belong to any partially ordered set. Tags can index reactions, can be real time, can encode causality, can do both, etc., as we pointed out before. And then tags can be tuples. And so, for example, in this particular case, we see X that has tags T1, T2, T3, T4, and Y has tags 2, 3. So they are completely unrelated, if you like. So tags can be totally unrelated. Now, how can we transform a synchronous signal using tags into an asynchronous one? Well, one way is that we take the two signals with their tags and the tags align, and then what we do is that we erase the tag, right, and we replace it with another one, so that we break the constraint that this event has to come at the same index as this other event, at the same reaction as this other event. So if we remove that, then this thing becomes free with respect to this one, and then we have a desynchronization on the signal. Okay, so different tag sets can be used for different systems. Again, we can mix synchronous system with a particular tag set N and a synchronous one. Now, when is this useful? We talk about the GALS model, remember, globally asynchronous, locally synchronous. Ta-da! Here they are, right? So this is it. So that's what you're going to be using, right? So some of the tags will be representing the asynchronicity of the relationship between different subsystems, and then the synchronous tags are related to the operation of each of the blocks that are in the system. So we said before, synchronous systems are the ones that are lining up on the reaction index. Now, let's define a particular map, which is called the time change. This map is bijective and strictly increasing. So bijective means it's one-to-one correspondence, and it's strictly increasing. So in other words, said in simple terms, you take times and you stretch it. So what you have an event here with a particular tag, you apply the map row, this moves out, right? So you're expanding the time. Then you call RT, the set of all time changes over T, and then we say that P is stuttering invariant, process P is stuttering invariant. This red doesn't read at all on my screen, it's so beautiful. Okay. Yeah, that's true. In fact, I was saying, well, I was looking at it and saying, gee, I can't see it. Yeah, try again. Maybe with. Okay, so Marco, per un po'. E poi l'altra. Okay, ding, I'm done. Okay, can you see it now? Okay, good. Now, P is said to be stuttering invariant if and only if for every behavior B which belongs to the process P, and every time change rho in RT, then the fact that you have the behavior B rho in P implies that this tag, event which is characterized by D and T belongs to B, and the extended time with this value here belongs to B rho. Okay, which means that you take the time, you extend it, choom, right? For some of the signals and so on. So now, if indeed, and why do we say stuttering invariant? Because when you take this thing and you extend it, in some sense you keep the guy mute for a certain period, right? So you take it not doing anything. You take this time here, you extend it, so this event gets mapped here, and in between, nothing, right? So stuck. Now, if indeed nothing changes, if you extend this stuff, right, and the system keeps on behaving the same, we call it stuttering invariant, because it doesn't matter what we do to the tags of this signal, nothing really changes.
So,
yeah.
Really,
no, I can't.
But in a continuous signal, it's present at all points. So if I take two points and try to stretch them apart...
No, you stretch them apart. In other words, you, since it's a continuum, right? So what happens is that, suppose that you have, a sinusoid like this, right? And so what happens is that the entire sinusoid gets... Okay, so elongated, right? Okay, so that's what it means, right? Expanded in time, right? And this is kind of interesting because we will see that indeed it has something to do with the desynchronization. In other words, what we do is that if we eliminate the constraints that these two guys come together, it's, in some sense we are changing the time for one guy and not for the other. So if nothing changes at the end, it means it doesn't matter when it comes, right? So that we can desynchronize this event with the rest and we don't change the output sequence. So that's the point. And by the way, stuttering invariance is used all over the place. And it's not only for this particular purpose, but you can find it in other places. Now, we know that synchronous events have the same tag, and synchronous signals is when all the signals have the same tag, and synchronous behavior is when you have two behaviors, then you have that for all signal in B1, there exists a signal in B2, such that the two signals are synchronous. A synchronous process is when every behavior belongs to a behavior of P1, then for all the behavior BJ belonging to the behavior of P2, then these two behaviors are synchronous. And this we already done when we discussed the stack signal model. Now, we say you have a standalone synchronous behavior when the behavior is synchronous to itself. Okay, great deal. And synchronous process system P is when, again, P is synchronous with itself. In a synchronous system P, every signal is synchronous with every other signal, of course. And that's the reason why you have that equivalence pointed up there. Now, we can say equivalently that for each tag T, a signal has exactly one corresponding event. Now, that event can be characterized by missing value, right? So remember that this is always possible, right, in a synchronous system. But there must be an event, right? Even if the event carries no information. But this very definition of synchronous. So this is an example for a synchronous system. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4 signals that are the ones that P, Q, and R exchange, and then you have that W is Boolean, and the others are other kind of signals. But you see that for every tag T1, T2, T3, T4, T5, you have a value corresponding to it, and the tag set is shared among all the signals. It's the same tag set. Okay, it's very important for synchronous system. Okay. Now we have seen when Stavros taught the class that there are languages that are synchronous, and so again the simplicity of synchronous assumption plus the power of concurrency in the system specification it gives you a nice abstraction that you can work with. Now you may ask why in the Earth these synchronous languages are not used everywhere. There are two reasons, right? One, the first reason is that legacy code, right? So legacy. So people have written in C or even worse, in assembly code for all their life, right? And so there are massive amount of code in embedded systems that are not written in synchronous signal. They are written, they are thought of a standard software system, and so they don't use languages with rigorous semantics. So that's one. And so if you've got that, you know, there's nothing you can do unless you rewrite completely that. The second point why people don't use synchronous reactive languages is the fact that indeed they are wasteful, meaning that they are not efficient when it comes to implementation. So in other words, if you are good at writing C code, you can beat any time the compiler or a synchronous language. But of course, because you have less constraints, right? So in the case of synchronous languages, you are forcing things to occur in a particular way, and you are forcing the system to look up at values when it doesn't need to look if you are implementing your functionality with a standard language. So it is wasteful, right, for this way. And so these two are the main reason. There is a third reason, and it's the fact that, of course, they are not widely supported by a variety of compilers in all the computers that you can dream of, right? So that you can develop into this language. Now, of course, there are companies that are selling you the compiler, selling you the analysis tools, and so on and so forth. But again, it's not standard knowledge around about how you program with this system. So it is also true that most use of these synchronous reactive languages is in aeronautics. And the reason being is that in aeronautics you have certification problems. And you have the problems of making sure that the behavior of the system is predictable. And so synchronicity guarantees you that. Okay, so that's the reason why these languages are used there. In particular, Signal and Lustre are used in the in aeronautics, in particular in Airbus, and some also in the United States that start making their presence.
Signal and Lustre also,
but they're
not currently safe, right?
No,
they're
not.
So there's also an issue of a series of functions that they just can't compute.
No, that's for sure. But the issue is also, do we need this set of functions for doing, for example, embedded systems or embedded controllers? The answer is most of the time no, right? So the functions that are, and if indeed these functions are not characterizable, right, it means that the problem of deciding what happens to it is not well defined either, right? So you may get speed, right, because you contact more by using some recursion or this kind of thing, but on the other hand, you lose expressivity, right? So it's always a trade-off between the two. Same token, if you use a synchronous methodology for hardware, you can go much faster, blah, blah, blah. But you are sensitive to environmental variables that you cannot control. So, for example, data. Depending on the kind of data you get, you have more speed, less speed, and so on. If you have a synchronous implementation, it's always the same. you can predict. Right? And so one of the big value of synchronous language is more predictable. Now the other thing that is interesting is that if you use the synchronous language for describing your entire system, do you need an operating system? Why?
It's all fixed rate.
It's all fixed. So you boom, you get one gigantic program at the end, which is the implementation of a finite state machine, So there are no loops. There is only one gigantic loop, right? It says next reaction, next reaction, next reaction. And the rest is all linear code, right? Now, any idea how big the code may be? Think about it. The code generated by the compiler of the synchronous reactive length. It's going to be smaller than or large? Think. Larger. Because essentially what you do is that you're writing the next state function. Okay, of a completely instantiated finite state machine, which is obtained by making the product of the states of the finite state machine. So it doesn't have to be larger, but in general it is larger, and in general it's much larger. And the execution of the code, according to you, is faster or slower?
Slower.
Faster. Faster because it doesn't know to check. So it's all linear code, right? And so there's no checking. So it's everything can be done at compile time. So at runtime, you do almost nothing, right? If indeed instead you don't use this, then you need runtime scheduling, right? So that's what the operating system does. It decides when you schedule things to be processed, right? So, of course, I mean, in general, it's faster because again, you are trading off, it may be so humongous and finite state machine, but just to compute the next state function, it takes a large amount. But in general, since it's linear code, no if then else, no nothing, it goes instantly fast. In general. Okay. But not, I cannot claim that it's always the case. Right? Make it the case in which actually the standard code is faster, execute faster. So I should qualify what I say, because you are also right to say, well, it takes short. What I'm saying is that it is very fast to execute what it is described. Right? Now, but because it's synchronous, and what happens is that you have always to compute the next state function. Right? Well, if you use the other technique, right, the standard coding technique, and you have runtime things, you don't have to compute everything. Right? You just follow a path, right, in the computation tree. So in that case, maybe if the function that you want to compute, this particular characteristic, you go much faster, but not in computing that one, because you compute something else. Okay. Okay. Now the elegance of Signale and Lustre is also from a mathematical point of view, because you can relate what the signal compiler does with clock calculus. So, clock, what does that mean? Is that the essential thing that you use to schedule the execution of a program is about the clock, so the index of the reaction, right? Which is the peak of the clock, right? So the generic clock. So that's the reason why they call it a clock calculus. So you statically analyze every program statement, and then you identify each variable's clock, and then you schedule the overall computation, which means that everything is done at compile time. You don't need to do anything else. So it's statically scheduled. So in fact, one of the big advantages of data flow, by the way, is that it's statically schedulable, and it is asynchronous. So hallelujah, right? Data flow is the best that you can imagine, because there is only causality, and you know if you have static data flow, you know that everything can be schedule a priori at compile time, not at runtime, and so that's you can't beat that. And in fact, the simulators of data flow are probably the fastest simulator known to man, except that most of the systems are not data flow, and so sorry, no cookie. And for example, there is this issue of remember that the static data flow, we know a priori, not only that we can schedule things, right? But we know also what is the size of memory that we need to associate with each actor, because we know what is the buffer size, right? Because when you have data flow, this is what the discussion we had this morning, is for static data flow, we know the problem of deciding how much, how many places in the buffer in order to compute the calculation is computable. Right? So, well, in general, it's undecidable. So, can process methods, if you want to know what is the buffer size, if one buffer size will solve the problem of not overwriting the data and not getting wrong results, undecidable. Okay? So, but if we have static data flows, hallelujah, right? We know what's in the memory that we need and so on. So everything is pre-known, known a priori. So we even know how much memory we need to do a computation beforehand, hallelujah. Nothing better than that. Now you see also the advantage of using models of computation, because if indeed you know that a particular application has that characteristic, then you know what is the best possible implementation known to man, which is going directly after a model that you are trying to work with, okay? And so when we talk about model-based design, it means that the origin of everything is in the model. And then the coding is just a way of executing the model in the most efficient way. So if the model of your system is a finite state machine, then we know that languages like this are the best. But by the way, if you have a finite state machine, you can also mimic the execution of a synchronous language by simply coding the next state function. And still you have no loop code, blah, 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 except that each of the constructs is a C statement instead of being an SRL or Lustre statement. So, and that is another advantage of model-based design, because you start not with the computer language, you start with the model, with the mathematical model. Now, if you really look into it, the synchronous reactive languages are a model of computation with an appropriate way of expressing that model of computation, which is compact. Right? And so synchronous reactive languages are ways of describing, quote-unquote, glorified finite state machine really compactly. Right? So that's this story here. Okay. Now, synchronous event behavior and processes. So we say that two asynchronous events have different tags. So we say that S1 and S2 are asynchronous if tag of S1 is different than tag of S2. So this one is not asynchronous, like everything which is not synchronous is asynchronous. This is the precise definition. So a synchronous signal is when for every event in S1, for every event in S2, the two events are asynchronous. So nothing happens on the same tag. Okay, so only one event can occur at any one single tag. In synchronous, we know that for every tag, there must be an event. Okay, now in this case, it's all the way around. Okay, now asynchronous processes, then it says that everything in this in the behaviors has to be asynchronous. So no sharing of nothing, no tag to share here. In a synchronous system, standalone asynchronous behavior is when the behavior is asynchronous with itself, and then we say an asynchronous process when the process is asynchronous with itself, which implies that all the signals in the processes are such that they are asynchronous with each other. And so the signal have disjoint artifacts, for example. So you can have disjoint artifacts, which means the artifacts don't mean anything for the other guy, or you can say they are different. Okay, either way. Okay? So different means that they take value on the same set, but the tags of this signal are different than the tag in this other signal, even though they take value in the same set. Or they are picked up out of different sets. In which case, then, it's of course, you don't have this. You have it by construction that they are synchronous. So, equivalent for each stack T, there is exactly one event across all signals. So, now this one is a synchronous system. So, first of all, the T, which contains only a dot, right, is a singleton. So, the tag system essentially is not there, so it's a trivial set, which means that there is no global coordination information, no information on absolute relative ordering of events, and absence cannot be sensed and used to exercise control. And so this one is really totally useless in some sense. Okay. Now, this one that we see here is expressing how you can compose two systems with this kind of properties, and then you see that you can compose A and T and Q along A by doing this this operation. Okay, so Ole. Now, what does this mean? So we compose. You look at the at this signal B. You have T F T F T F T F. Now this one is T F T F T F T F. So what we can say is that which two signals B and B are coherent, meaning that they unify on values. That is, the information of the tag really doesn't tell me how these things line up, but among each other, that we can say that these two are related because they have the same value. So the unification, so when we combine the two, the only thing that we can unify on is on the value of the signal. By the same token here, you have the X, which is unified on its value. So this one is an example of a synchronous system. So that free asynchronous process communication by sharing signals, and these signals are YA, ZA, WA, and XA. But the signals don't share tags, right? So we saw before that in the case of a synchronous thing, we had that all the signals, all the events in YA, ZA, WA, and XA were lined up along reactions. In this particular case, you see, there is no sharing whatsoever. You see, here is T1, the second signal is T2, T3, T4, and then again, tum, 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 like this. So nothing is shared across different signals. There is no tag sharing at all. Now, there are in-between systems, in the sense that there are systems in which some of the signals may be synchronous, and some of the signals may be asynchronous. Some of the events may be synchronous, some of the events may be asynchronous. And so these are called in-between sets. And if we adopt the definition of asynchronous, which is everything is not synchronous, then we have the in-between set that is contained in this definition of asynchronous. The way in which we define it, let's say that nothing is shared along the tags, then is not the complement of the synchronous system, in the sense that there may be systems that are not synchronous nor asynchronous. Well, one such system are the globally asynchronous, locally synchronous system, because in the various islands of behavior, you have synchronicity. So which means that all the internal signals of QG, RG, and TG are sharing the same tag set. But when it comes to exchanging signal among themselves, then the signals that are used to exchange this information, they don't share any tag. And so in fact, we use this, we encode this by introducing a communication process, which is called EG, and the signal of this communication process, which are the variables that are used to exchange information, don't share any tag at all. Notice that before we had Y1, which was the same as Y2, Now, in this particular case, we cannot say that because Y1 is the output of QG and Y2 is the input of PG, but we say that they are synchronous, so Y1 and Y2 don't share the same tax set, and so that's the reason why we have to put this process in between. Because otherwise, if we just draw a line from here to there, then by construction, this signal here is the same, which is the output of this guy, is the same as the input of that one. And so we will have an implied synchronicity for the same signal by identity. So this one is an example of a Gauss system where you have PG, QG, RG, and EG. EG is the communication, is the media process. You see that PG is synchronous, right? Because you see that the events line up along particular tags, right? Notice that some of the signals have the absent signal symbol in them, that's fine. So we know that that corresponds to the definition of synchronous system. We have QG, that is also a synchronous system, and we have RG, that is also a synchronous system. But notice that all the signals in these three processes are not sharing the same tag. And in fact, if we look at the variables that are exchanged between these three processes, you see that none of them is lined up. Right? They are all different. Of course, they line up in W1, Y2, and Z2 because these are the outputs of the are the variables that are corresponding to the first process. And W2, X1, and W1. Because they are associated with the same process and so on. But among the different processes, there is nothing clear. So modeling this communication media. So what does the communication media do? It does a signal decoupling. So what it models communication thread between the two processes. And again, from a global point of view, a Gauss system is a system with multiple tag sets. And so each of the islands can have its own tag set, which means that they can have a different reaction index, which means that some of it may go very fast, some of which may go very slow. So they are not related. Okay? So this is the reason why they're called multi-clock systems. And this is full, I mean, the world is full of multi-clock systems all over the place. And so that's the way in which we can represent the this system. Again, each tag set represents a dimension that is familiar to a synchronous process and extraneous to all other synchronous processes. And again, this is different from synchronous event in the sense that when you look at the signals that are shared between two different subsystems, then you may have unexpected absent values events that may arise. Okay, this is due to the fact that again you have these inputs that are not lined up with the clock of the signal itself. The EG does that kind of time mapping, right? It's changing the tag set. Now the other interesting point is that in this modelization, we clearly identify as the operation of communication to change, to manipulate the tag set. Okay? So I have a particular signal here and I send it to him, right? And because I'm sending it, it will take more take some time to get there, right? And so if I look at from a tag point of view, the signal that he gets is different from mine. Why? Because the time stamp is different. It's the same value, but the tag set is different. So the communication media has manipulated the tag set. Okay. Now, you may also know about the problem that you sometimes, due to communication problems, you may get inversion, right? Which means that the reaction to a particular event may arrive later than something, than a reaction of an event that had this effect earlier. So what happens is that because of a communication process, we have sequences which are all disaligned, right? And that sometimes is a real serious problem, right? And so, in fact, there are protocols that guarantee that things arrive in the right sequences. Like for example, so just this morning I got two messages, email messages. And so I was reading the first one and saying, what the heck is this guy talking about? Then after a few minutes, another message arrived that was actually before that. And now I understood. Aha! Right? This is an inversion. Right? And I guess you have seen that too. Right? And that's because the two messages have followed different paths. Right? And so the tags of this guy got screwed less than this. And so they were in this order, and then because of the communication, suck! They got this way. Okay? And so this is an example of what occurred. Now, we are intelligent enough to understand that this is what went on, right? But suppose that, and sometimes it happens, right? One guy is fast to jump the gun, and then he answers to this message, maybe all upset, say, what the heck are you talking about? And then the other guy says, what? And well, that is erroneous reaction due to time inversion, right? And so communication screwed up the time. And so that's what we don't. So the two systems, for example, suppose that he has a better communication mechanism. He gets the message in the right sequence. I get the message in the wrong sequence. And so it means that there are communications that guarantee that the sequence is maintained, and others that don't. And so it's obvious that if we can guarantee that the messages arrive in the order in which they are sent, it would be good. Right? Would be very good. And so that's this unexpected absent value event. So which means that if this message is supposed to arrive to you and me at the same time, well, he gets it, I get the known there, not there. So it's unexpected. Now, if indeed this not expected causes me to react in a different way than if I read the message, then we have a problem in the sense that the communication process is changing the behavior of the system. So the role of absence. So we say that if T doesn't belong to TS, you have event absence. Then you can have two kinds of absence. One is the event absence. So there is no tag in that particular. The tag that you see is not in the original tag set. The value absence is that, yes, you get the T in TS, but indeed the value of that at that tag is what we know. And presence is that when there is the T belongs to the tag set and there is an event with that tag which is different, whose value is different from the absent value. So now synchronous system, it says that event absence does not occur. So we cannot have no event. An event must occur at the reaction. Right? Now that event may have the missing, the absent value. Right? Which means that in the synchronous system, when something happens, everybody has to do something. Right? Has to check. And if there is nothing, you say check or nothing, and you go to sleep. But you must do that. You must check. You must check. And that is the meaning of, again, synchronous. A synchronous system, events are systematically absent, right? And a present event in a signal implies that in all the remaining signal there are no other events, so implies the absence of the other thing. There is no common, in other words, there is no common reference across processes. And the processes rely on robust and shaking protocols, the only thing that they can do. So you say, well, I got this thing. And so you send this thing. I say, okay, I understand. I can send you another stuff. Right? So that's the only thing you can do because you have no information whatsoever of the meaning of the tag of the original signal. So that's the reason why you need a handshaking signal. Because you want to make sure things get delivered when they are supposed to. And that's the reason, again, when you have a system with the clock, what happens is that when you look at your mail, right, everybody looks at the mail at the same time, right? And so you know that you are not, you know, out of phase with everybody else. Well, in a synchronous system, like, you know, what we have in the internet, this happens all the time. Now, then, the question is that, can I automatically deploy synchronous design on distributed architectures? And the reason why you want to do that is, again, if I have to wait to look at things, that all the signals get delivered, all the events get delivered, right, then it's very, very slow, right? So everything is kind of tied up by the slowest communication path or the slowest computing element. So is the minimum common speed that you have to look at, both in communication and computation. So that is bad. And so if indeed you say, if we are all very close, right, then the communication time doesn't matter that much because we know that we are very close, right? And so that is the reason why you do the locally synchronous. Locally synchronous means that there are processes that are nearby, and so since they are nearby, you can do this clocking and not pay anything because the communication is very fast and the computation is consistent for it. Right? Now, but if we are like here and then we are sending mail to Japan, then, you know, to force that we are synchronous, it would take, you know, for a class, it would take a long time, right, to get to the next slide, because they have to get the slide, they have to get the voice. When they got it, then we can move on, right? No good, right? So what you would like to do is that, again, to do as much synchronicity as you can, but you would like the long communication to be asynchronous, right? And that's the reason why, again, you want to have the GALS thing. So there are two approaches to do this deployment of synchronous design on distributed architecture. One is called latency-insensitive design, and the other one is called desynchronization of synchronous programs. So there are two different approaches. Now, the latency-insensitive design, which we are not covering here, we'll see if we have time we'll cover it because it's kind of interesting, but it's very much related to the hardware implementation of things. So it's chip-driven. And what the idea there is essentially to say, well, we have this communication delay that is long, right, and which forces us to be slow. Now, what if we take this link and we use buffers to store intermediate steps of the data? So what happens is that, okay, we use a synchronous assumption, fine. And then what I do is that I'm sending my information, then I want to make sure that this information gets to a buffer where it is stored before the reaction index comes in, before the clock tick comes in. When the clock tick comes in, the data is safely stored here. But it's not arrived to where I want to, right? Then next clock tick, this thing gets advanced some more, and it travels as far as you can get in that clock cycle and gets through again. Until, click, you cover enough space to get to where you want to go. Okay? So what happened here? It happened that you have a delay or latency between when I sent the signal and when he receives it of three clock ticks. Right? But, when is it going to get my second information? Right? Suppose that I go I go at the clock cycle. So I go three times as fast as the communication. Now what I do is that I keep on pumping the signal, right, out. And so at the beginning, pipeline. And so the idea is that you solve this issue of desynchronization by pipeline. And so the pipeline keeps you going maximum speed. Of course, you have to have enough stations along the way. And in fact, we call them relay stations, right? Because they are essentially passing flags, right? Now, it so happens that now, for example, Intel is using this stuff, right? And they call it elastic circuit, but it's the same thing, latency intensity process. And so you're pipelining the communication. And so you deal with the problem of making everything go fast enough by pipelining. Now, then there is I know that someone is going to ask, what happens if you have loops? Not easy, right? Because then you cannot possibly go at maximum speed. You have to see what the behavior of the cycles are. But there are algorithms to tell you what to do on the buffer in order to maximize the throughput, right? And so this is called latency insensitive protocol because, I mean, it's kind of a misnomer, because what happens is that you do have a latency period, because when you send it the first signal, the guy here is saying nonsense, right? Because it doesn't get the real value. And then after a certain number of clicks, then everything is synchronized, right? And then they start making sense, right? Now remember what I said about stuttering and the stuttering invariance, right? So what happens is that this poor guy that is not getting the data because this data aren't getting there, right, stutters. And he sees nothing at his input. So he checks, and he sees nothing, nothing. So he stutters twice, right? Then he sees the stuff, and then he says, ha-ha, I compute, right? So the output is going to be nothing, nothing, compute. Now, suppose that you had a real synchronization, global synchronization. Would you see the nothing, nothing? No. We'd see everything. With different tags, right? Much longer tags, if you like. But it will not be that way. But can you say that the two systems compute the same thing? Yes, it is. Yes. Why? Stream equivalence is preserved, because the only thing that is differing is no value, right? So the guy is da-da-da-da-da, like this, right? It's not changing its reaction, okay? So that's the latency sensitive business. Now, this synchronization of synchronous program is kind of interesting, because what you do is, again, take the view of the tag system, right? And so to desynchronize the communication, what does that mean? Is that I'm going to erase the tags, right? I'm not going to, in some sense, to force the tags to be lined up. So I simply take them away, right? Now, at this point, you got to say, well, how my system are going to react? Now, in the case of latency-sensitive protocol, we solve a problem by inserting the relay station, right? And so no matter what the single processes do, the only thing that we have to make sure is that the process, they see nothing, they do nothing, okay? So you must be able to stop the system, right? And that's the only requirement, nothing else. Zero zip, right? And then you have the stream equivalence of latency insensitive design versus fully synchronous design. The streams are the same. Now, in the case of these things, when you take away the tag, then it's not true that no matter what these guys do, right, the stream equivalence is preserved. Not at all. And so you have to impose conditions on the guys in such a way that this is okay. So you must say, if I am built this way, then nothing changes my output, even though the signals arrive out of order. Out of order meaning not at the time when expecting them to arrive. But I still produce the right value. Okay? And so this brought to the notion, and it is in the slide, so except that I got to disappear in 5 minutes. But and so I'm telling you what is in the slides without going through line by line. So the properties of the guide, right, so that everything was fine, are endochrony and isochrony, right? Endochrony is essentially saying that I get some subset of a signal, and then I have, from this subset of the signals, realize what is missing and what I'm expecting to receive the other. Rather obvious, because if you know that, right, then you know that you are missing some information, you can stop and wait for this information to arrive. And so it means that from partial information, I can recover what is missing and when it's supposed to arrive. Okay? Say nothing. I mean, is a kind of a strong assumption. But isochrony is related to the relationship between two processes, and is related to the kind of information that he is giving me, and then I can infer about his behavior. So these two conditions together ensure that you have stream equivalence. Now, this is quite cumbersome, also because if you have a process connected to 22 processes, you have to do one by one, right? This isochrony problem has to be, isochrony definition depends on the guy I'm talking to. And so if I'm talking to 5 guys, I have to be isochronous with you, with you, with you, with you, with you. And so the check is complicated. Now, the interesting thing is that you can build adapters, which means a shell around the process, which makes it isochronous and endochronous. So originally these guys were not, so you build some logic around it and you make them that way. Now, what is the problem there? You have to pay, right? You have to pay in terms of additional logic that you have to put in there. Additional logic in the programming sense, so additional code, or you have to put additional hardware if it is a hardware process and you need to do something to the signals that are right. Okay? So either way, you have to add information, right, to the thing. Now, in the case of latency-insensitive protocol, where do you add stuff? Obviously, the relay station, right? The stations that are scattered around in the communication. You have to have also a mechanism that says, okay, take this data and move it over. Right? And then the other thing that you have to do is to have a shell around the processes too, to make sure that if I get absence of signal, you stop the operation. So there must be some small amount of additional logic. So you have additional logic in the channel, and you have additional logic around the system. In the other case, in the case of a desynchronization or synchronous program, you need additional logic around the block, right? Not in the channel, around the block, which is essentially saying that you need to implement particular protocols. Now, the interesting thing is that these protocols, in both cases, are very well characterized. They can be represented by a model, which is in general is a finite state machine. So they can be formally verified and can be automatically synthesized. So yes, it is wasteful. And so the question, but it is all automated, can be all automated. So now, the question is it worth the gain? So the question that we have to ask is that, is the additional stuff that we put around the processes and in the channels worth the price that you have to pay? It's worth the amount of savings that I get. Because maybe that I just better off doing all synchronous. No addition of nothing. Just slowing the clock, right? Slowing everything down. So which one is better, right? And so there is no answer to that. You have to try, right? But there are very interesting optimization problems in terms of the design, for example, of a relay station. How many relay stations do you need? That's equivalent to the buffer situation. Where should I put them? And what kind of logic should I put into the relay station? In the case of the endochronous and isochronous processes, what do I need to put in there? Okay. Now, last thing that I want to say, and this may be interesting and important to discuss later on, and maybe you can have a reading in the class, which I think is quite interesting, is talking about a particular protocol that is absolutely kind of amazingly simple, which is called the loosely time-triggered architecture protocol, or TTP, loosely time-triggered protocol. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that you are assuming that the various clocks of the various processes that are connected are not the same. They deviate. But they don't deviate much. So you go faster, it goes slower, but not by much. Right? And so the question is that, can we guarantee that if you two guys are kind of close enough, then nothing bad happens to the equivalent. So in other words, that with respect to the ideal case in which you are computing exactly the same time, you have stream equivalence at the output. Well, there is a protocol that guarantees that the given a particular jitter around the speed of your relative clock, nothing changes. So you get this stream equivalent. Now, who is using that? Airbus. So Airbus, all the planes of Airbus are based on this loosely time-trigger architecture. So we hope that the proof is correct, because otherwise we may have some problems. Who is going to fly? Me! With airplane! Airbus! Okay, so I surely hope that they didn't make any mistake there. But it's interesting also that when they implemented it, sounded reasonable, but there was no proof, right? that was working. So thank God, you know, the one of the papers that you have in your readers, and again, you may want to present it to the class. We can prove that indeed the Loosely Timed Trigger protocol is okay, right? But only with a tag set, only using this formula here. Before, nobody was able to prove it. Not because it was impossible, because in fact, with the tag set you can. But the fact that the tag signal model was the right formalism in which you can prove it stuff. Right? Maybe there was another way, but nobody came up with the idea on how to prove it. Even the people who invented this Loosely Timed Trigger process. And among which was Paul Cassie, who is a very deep mathematical guy, right? I mean, he's the guy who invented SIGNAP, right? In Lustre, so. Yet, he couldn't prove, unless we were using the tag signal mode, right? So, beautiful, right? And that is the reason why then you get this particular model so much referred to, because it's useful. Not to do anything but proving stuff, because it's denotation, right? It's not operational, so you can do denotation. Now, announcement is that we have here Professor Marco Di Natale from Scuola Superiore di Sant'Anna in Pisa, who is a world-renowned expert in real-time operating systems, scheduling problems, and all that. So we are going to have 2 weeks of guest lectures about real-time operating system and methodologies for designing efficient schedules and of programs and the like. So in other words, this lecture here concludes the part about formal model of computation. So we got the finite state machine data flow and filtering, et cetera. We got the framework where to put this thing. It's a signal, tag signal model. We show a user tag signal model to do with synchronization, desynchronization stuff. Now it's time to move to the next thing. And the next thing, what is it? Is the how we take this functionality and method to architecture. So architecture can be a software architecture, which is how we split up a functionality into tasks, right? So pieces of code, right? Interrelated among themselves, and how a particular computing platform is going to execute this model, right? So suppose that you have a single processor here, and you have a concurrent process, like we have shown many times. Now, how are we going to handle the execution of a model, concurrent model, onto a single processor? So what do you need to do? You need to move from a partially ordered set into a totally ordered set. Right? We have to put everything in line, because this poor guy can only do one thing at a time. Right? So we have to line them up. Now guess what that is called? Scheduling. Right? And so when you think about scheduling, oh my God, so there are two kinds of scheduling. One kind of scheduling is intrinsic in the model of computation. So causality needs scheduling. You cannot process this guy if this guy has an error like this. And so you say, I compute this first and this. That is an intrinsic scheduling problem, which is related to the causality relationship. That's nothing to do with implementation. You must do that just to know what the thing does. Right? You have to schedule the computation. The other kind of scheduling is actually a mapping of a particular mathematical model into an execution platform. Right? So you have to put things in line. Right? Now, suppose that you have a multi-core computing framework, right? Instead of a single core. Single core, we have to put everything in line, right? And that's what the operating system does. The real-time operating system is trying to make it in such a way that the response to the external input are within the time bound that you are required to be reactive to the external thing. So if you have multiple core, what is the problem now? Well, you have multiple core, so, well, I don't need to line up. Do you, or you don't? What is the issue here? Well, depends on the model, how much concurrency there is, and depends on the platform, of course, right? But still, what you have to do is you have to adapt a mathematical model to a model of the architecture, right? And so the concurrency of this guy is different than the concurrency of this guy. So you need anyhow to decide on scheduling and allocation. So you have to say which of these cores the computation goes and which sequence. Okay, so scheduling and allocation. So I get single process scheduling, and multiple process or multiple resources. You have to allocate the resources to the computation you need to carry, and you need to put them in line. Okay. Now, interestingly enough, you can say even that scheduling is actually taking a big chunk of stuff, right? That fits in one processor just fine, but you want to make it faster, and you have a multiprocessor core, a multiprocessor chip. Then what you have to do is that you have to take this blob, break it, and then divide it into this processor. So it's not only one way that you have many things you have to map in a few things. You may have a few things and you map in many things. Which one of the two, according to your judgment, is easier or more difficult? Actually, there's much more degrees of freedom when you break things up, right? And in general, to find the right breakup is a pain in the neck. So it's much easier to aggregate than decompose. Okay? Rule number one. Okay? San Giovanni's rule number one. Remember. Okay. See you. And so.